of anybody, yeah. from John Dos Passos in USA. All right then, we are two nations. However, I also wanted to read from... from what Norman said in the interview that is in the current issue of the New York magazine, and a conversation with his son. And this is how it ends. Norman writes, or says, "Wisdom is ready to reach us from the most unexpected quarters. Here I quote from a man who became wise a little too late in life. Naturally, the common people don't want war. But after all, it is the leaders of a country who determine the policy. And it is always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them that they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country." That was Hermann Göring speaking at the Nuremberg trials after World War II. It is one thing to be forewarned. Will we ever be forearmed? Thank you.
That's renowned Indian-British author Salman Rushdie speaking in 2004 at a Pen American Center event at Cooper Union in New York. On Friday, he was stabbed at least 10 times. He is now in critical condition after that assassination attempt. That does it for our show. I am Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a new study says the U.S. will develop an extreme heat belt by 2050. The timbers and thorns are accused of creating a toxic environment for working mothers, and TriMet plans to add more transit police. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 15th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. By the 2050s, there will be 100 million Americans living in a heat belt thanks to global warming. That's according to a new study by the First Street Foundation, which looked at the United States county by county and measured which counties would have at least one day at 125 degrees Fahrenheit per year. The heat belt cuts through the Midwest, going as far north as Chicago. They identified the region from northern Texas to Illinois as vulnerable to an extreme heat belt. Their analysis also showed high risk for the southeast and mid-Atlantic coast of the U.S., particularly Florida. The United States is already seeing significant markings of how the climate crisis is changing our world and our weather. This past month, the overnight temperatures across the country hit a new record high. High overnight temperatures during a heat wave increases public health risk because people don't get a chance to cool off or cool down their spaces. The climate crisis and global warming don't just impact how hot we can expect the weather to get in the future, but also how long it will stay that way. Some parts of the country experience 20 consecutive days of heat above 100 degrees. By 2053, those heat waves could last as long as 74 days. That extremely long heat also equates to an extreme demand for cooling. Former employees of the Timbers and Thorns say the soccer club has a toxic work environment for women. They point specifically to Mike Golub, the team president of business, and the owner, Merritt Paulson. Both men face criticism for their treatment of working mothers, especially nursing mothers. Employees say Golub often crossed the line, becoming angry in meetings and throwing things at people's heads. The organization also faces criticism for not having a space for nursing moms to pump breast milk while at work. Some were relegated to using the bathroom or an electrical closet. Golub and Paulson defended themselves against the accusations. Golub told Sports Illustrated, quote, "If how I conducted myself with truly the best intentions made anyone uncomfortable, I take that really seriously. I'm really good at what I do, and I'm a really good person, but I can be better," end quote. More transit police will be coming to Portland area buses and trains. That's new from TriMet this week. They say more transit enforcement is needed because of the opioid crisis and an uptick of drug use on public buses. KBOO's Grant Button has more.
TriMet plans to add more police to the transit system, citing increased opioid use in Oregon. Over the past few years, Oregon has seen a spike in opioid use, particularly fentanyl. Health experts say that increased access to fentanyl has contributed to a 41% increase in overdose deaths over the past year. As the use of fentanyl has increased, it has become more frequent in public spaces, especially on and around TriMet buses. Employees of TriMet say they have been increasingly concerned about their health from exposure to the smoke and how it could impact their ability to pass drug tests. In response, TriMet has created a new policy to air out buses and an increased frequency of transit police on enforcement missions. The agency has extra budgetary funds for more transit police because there are so many open positions. But not all riders want to see an increase in security. An armed individual is often perceived as a threat, regardless of their credentials. Other criticism comes from the fact that the required airing out policy often leaves drivers behind schedule, frustrating many of those who count on the buses to be on time. A TriMet operator shared his thoughts on the policy, saying that it's clearly a policy that was done by somebody who never actually worked the job. Finding a balance between the safety and comfort of the passengers and drivers is proving to be difficult, especially for a company struggling to stay afloat after hovering around 57% of their pre-pandemic ridership levels as of June 2022. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
Federal officials warn about threats against law enforcement, and Democrats successfully push the Inflation Reduction Act through Congress. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Violence against law enforcement is not the answer, no matter what anybody's upset about or who they're upset with.
FBI Director Christopher Wray says there's been an alarming rise in violence against law enforcement. Federal officials cite a spike in threats to judicial and government officials connected to the FBI search of former President Donald Trump's home. That search recovered a large number of top secret and highly classified documents. but a gunman died in an attack on the FBI in Cincinnati, Ohio last week, and a number of Republican lawmakers accused the Justice Department of abusing its powers. Oklahoma Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen said the raid is the result of a double standard.
Where was this same media frenzy when there was 33,000 classified emails on a server in a bathroom with Hillary Clinton? Why didn't they raid that bathroom?
Many of the Clinton email claims have been debunked. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urged the GOP to tone down its rhetoric about the Mar-a-Lago search.
If the nature of this of these documents is what appears to be, this is very serious.
Trump claims he declassified the documents before leaving office. The National Archives still considers them classified. The Inflation Reduction Act passed the House with zero Republican support. The nearly $740 billion measure includes large green energy initiatives, will raise taxes on certain corporations, continue health insurance subsidies, and cut the price of many prescription drugs. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy criticized Democrats for not directly tackling high gas and food prices. He also blasted the use of proxy voting.
For such a supposedly historic occasion, few Democrats even bothered to show up. Look around this chamber, Madam Speaker. The floor is nearly empty.
185 members, both Republicans and Democrats, voted by proxy. President Joe Biden is expected to sign the bill soon. Meanwhile, New York Congressman Jamal Bowman says the Democrats have more work to do.
Hold the House, win a couple of seats in the Senate so that we could become Manchin and Sinema proof. And once we do that, we can pass a true people's agenda.
That agenda could include codifying Roe v. Wade and passing an election reform bill. A group of House lawmakers arrived in Taiwan Sunday, nearly 2 weeks after a trip by Pelosi. The five-member delegation is meeting with top leaders to discuss reducing tensions with China and investments in semiconductors. More than 800 American citizens have been evacuated from Afghanistan since the withdrawal a year ago. According to a report from Republicans on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the Biden administration did not accurately portray events on the ground. It says there were just 36 U.S. consular officers there to process evacuees. Both the State Department and the Pentagon conducted their own reviews but haven't released the findings. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Some corporations claim to be pro-choice, but often end up supporting anti-choice candidates. That's an approach that could lead to a brain drain, as people leave states where reproductive rights have been sharply limited since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. The Roe decision is forcing companies to rethink long-standing policies of giving equally to both sides. Roz Brown reports.
Since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled women don't have a constitutional right to an abortion, many major corporations have expressed a commitment to women's rights. But some observers wonder if they'll stop funding anti-choice candidates. Such big players as Amazon, AT&T, and Coca-Cola all have policies that promote gender equity, with some promising to pay travel expenses for those seeking abortions. Ms. Magazine journalist Linda Burston says many of those same corporations have traditionally given money to lawmakers on both sides of the abortion question, and she believes consequences are coming.
There is going to be a major impact on businesses and on state economies, and I do think that as time goes on, women and men are not going to want to live in those states and do business with those states.
AT&T has funded politicians behind anti-abortion trigger laws in 13 states, according to Insider, which reported other telecom and media giants aren't far behind. Some academics in red states posted resumes online as soon as the high court's decision was handed down, while others expressed doubts about recruiting top-quality faculty and students. Burston believes some companies in pro-choice states will be eager to take advantage of the situation.
So they will gobble up those workers. States like California are now starting to provide incentives for corporations that want to leave anti-choice states. And I think they're going to succeed. There will be a brain drain in states that are oppressive towards women.
Burston predicts states with extreme laws that don't protect the life of the mother or have bounty hunting laws regarding abortion will fare the worst.
It's dangerous to be a woman in that state. you have a miscarriage or you have an ectopic pregnancy. Doctors basically have one hand tied behind their back because they are so afraid of being hauled before a judge.
The Institute for Women's Policy Research estimates state economies will lose $105 billion per year under abortion bans, due primarily to less participation in the workforce by women. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 58 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high of 87. Today in history, in 1947, India gains its independence from British company and crown rule after 190 years. The quote of the day is from French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte, who was born today in 1769. He said, quote, "In politics, stupidity is not a handicap." A South Dakota county has been ordered by a federal judge to protect Native electoral districts. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge has ordered Lyman County, South Dakota, to come up with a plan for the November elections that gives the Lower Brule tribe a chance to elect its preferred county commissioner candidates. The tribe has been negotiating with the county to establish Native majority districts. The commission came up with a compromise but says it cannot comply until the 2024 elections because of time constraints. Federal District Judge Roberta Lang says that would leave a plan in place for 2022 that violates the Federal Voting Rights Act. Victoria Wicks reports.
For 30 years, Lyman County has been one voting district with five at-large commissioners. That setup clearly violated the Federal Voting Rights Act because it diluted the vote of Lower Brule citizens, about 40% of the voting population. To rectify the federal violation, Lyman County decided to establish two voting districts, one of them containing a Native majority and two commission seats. But county officials said they could not implement the new plan until 2024, and so Lower Brule filed a federal lawsuit to force the county to act in time for the November 2022 election. At a federal court hearing in late July, county officials testified that they needed to reconfigure software and verify addresses of Native voters who use P.O. boxes or partial street addresses. But tribal manager Tim Azure testified that the Lower Brule Reservation contains primarily HUD housing, which has established addresses. In an exchange with Michael Cotter, one of the lawyers representing Lower Brule, Azure said the tribe has the ability to match 911 addresses to physical locations, but the county had not reached out to the tribe for help.
The county has indicated that it may have a few hundred addresses to verify. How long would you expect it to take the tribe to verify that many addresses?
I think it would probably take us 8 to 16 hours.
On August 11th, Judge Roberta Lang granted the tribe's request for a preliminary injunction and gave Lyman County commissioners 7 days to come up with a remedial plan or have the court create one for them. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Canadian government has apologized to a Saskatchewan Cree Nation for what's being described as an assimilation colony scheme. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the Crown Indigenous Relations Minister delivered the national apology on behalf of the federal government.
The Pepikasis Cree Nation was at the heart of a federal scheme that breached treaty agreements by setting up an experimental farm colony that took over the community's land and helped to assimilate Indigenous people. It was called the File Hill Colonies Scheme, and between 1897 and 1954, participants in the colony were chosen for the experiment after graduating from residential schools and industrial schools. They were forced to work on the community farm and were not allowed to return to their home communities where they originally lived. Indigenous Relations Minister Mark Miller.
At the time, Canada claimed, wrongly,
that this scheme would enhance agricultural productivity, but we now understand that this was an experiment that was invasive in nature and an experiment in radical social engineering. And for this, we are deeply sorry.
The apology was welcomed by the Pipikisis chief and council. Many of the band members had been trying for years to get that apology, as well as compensation for the wrongs linked to the colony. The band accepted a $150 million settlement in August of last year, but many members are still searching for answers about their origins and identity issues. Miller says the government hopes the apology can help the process of healing. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new study warns of mega floods in California, a crisis that seems unfathomable in the mega drought California currently endures. With that story and more, we turn to This Week in Water.
Too little water in California? How about too much? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
People in California are aware that disasters like the big one, a massive earthquake along the San Andreas Fault, are potentially in their future. But according to a new study, they should prepare for something almost inconceivable, mega floods.
It might seem implausible as the state confronts an historic mega drought. Just last week, Governor Gavin Newsom was announcing plans to boost the state's water supply in the face of climate change.
But global warming can also bring extreme weather events, and researchers from UCLA warn that floods, hundreds of miles long and tens of miles wide, could inundate Sacramento, Fresno, or Los Angeles.
The super floods would be caused by atmospheric rivers laden with moisture that stall over California and are locked in place by low pressure in the Northeast Pacific Ocean. Warmer air holds more moisture that leads to major flooding, as happened recently in St. Louis and Kentucky.
The scientists say it's not if, but when these mega floods will occur in California, with the odds much greater in winters that are dominated by El Nino conditions with warmer ocean surface temperatures.
One of the researchers, Daniel Swain, said that the future storm scenario includes stronger winds and more intense rainfall, and up to 400% more runoff in the Sierra Nevada, where precipitation will fall as rain, not snow. It could cause devastating landslides and debris flows, especially in areas scarred by wildfire.
Methane is a potent greenhouse gas, 80 times more damaging in the short term than CO2. It's emitted from oil and gas operations and agriculture, but also released from decomposing waste in landfills, where, according to a new study, quantities are larger than previously thought.
Scientists in the Netherlands collected data by satellites to show that some landfills release tons of methane each hour, with ones in urban areas of Argentina, Pakistan, and India emitting almost three times more than earlier assessments. A landfill in Buenos Aires had a climate impact equaling 1.5 million cars.
One researcher said that the problem can be easily solved by separating and composting the organic waste. Composting uses oxygen to prevent methane-producing microbes from creating the gas, but in landfills where the waste is buried, the microbes can thrive.
Old-growth forests are invaluable for their ability to trap and store CO2, clean air and water, and provide habitat. But they're not alone in these remarkable attributes. Have you ever heard of old-growth grasslands?
Researchers led by the University of Colorado Boulder want us to pay more attention to these often overlooked areas, which sequester about one-third of all carbon stored on land and are home to a range of diverse species. They are also more resilient than forests to fire, heat, and drought caused by climate change.
But ancient grasslands worldwide, from prairies to savannas, are imperiled, having been converted into farmland, used to grow trees, or developed as cities expand.
And like old-growth forests, pristine grasslands take centuries to restore, if at all. So what remains intact needs to be protected.
Luckily, there's been momentum in that direction. Just a few weeks ago, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon introduced legislation to establish the North American Grasslands Conservation Act to protect, restore, and manage these vital ecosystems.
Given that 85% of grasslands in the U.S. are privately owned, the act would empower ranchers, farmers, and tribes as stewards to improve biodiversity, support habitat connectivity, and protect watersheds, all while increasing sequestration to confront the climate crisis. Senators Michael Bennett of Colorado and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota co-sponsored the bill.
And finally, if you buy healthy food at the grocery store, you're doing a solid for the planet. A study from Oxford University found that nutritious foods tend to be more sustainable and environmentally friendly than other choices.
But when you pull a product off a store shelf, it's hard to determine its environmental footprint from its package. So researchers looked at more than 57,000 food items to build a database of individual ingredients and rank them by environmental impacts such as greenhouse gas emissions, land use, and water stress.
They then overlaid the nutrition quality in terms of calories, salt, saturated fats, sugar, protein, and fiber. Foods that were healthy and good for the planet tended to be made with plants and included fruits, vegetables, breakfast cereals, some breads, and meat alternatives like tofu or vegan sausages.
There were some surprising exceptions. Both nuts and seafood were nutritious but had relatively high environmental footprints. The team found that foods containing lamb and beef had the most serious environmental impact, scoring up to 3 times worse than options made with poultry.
Also in the lose-lose category for sustainability and health were cheese and chocolate. So fondue? Maybe fondant?
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
What if we named and ranked heat waves just like hurricanes? A bill in California aims to do just that. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When meteorologists report that a Category 4 hurricane is on the way, people know it's dangerous, and they need to prepare. A new bill could make California the first state in the nation to categorize heat waves in a similar way. The proposed legislation is based on a recommendation from the California Climate Insurance Working Group, which was convened by State Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara.
This is personal for me. I grew up in East Los Angeles with no air conditioning.
He says extreme heat can be dangerous, especially when people cannot cool off at night.
We know that a record number of people are hospitalized and actually die because of extreme heat. We really need to be more serious about communicating that risk.
Lara says naming and ranking heat waves would help the public better understand the scale of the danger, and it could prompt specific recommendations.
For example, a heat wave warning could urge vulnerable people like the elderly and those with respiratory illnesses to decrease physical activity outside.
Or it could prompt cities to open cooling centers so people can stay safe even as global warming brings more extreme heat. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Oregon communities unite to force a chronic polluter to shut down. The J.H. Baxter Company's wood mill closed earlier this year after complaints that it had dumped cancer-causing toxins into the air and soil in nearby neighborhoods. But a group of community organizations in West Eugene helped make the change. As Mark Richardson reports, organizers walked door-to-door to educate people about their protections under Oregon law.
A coalition of community organizations teamed up in Oregon to force a chronic polluter out of business and bring environmental justice to a nearby neighborhood. The groups, known as the West Eugene Community Coalition, used community engagement, education, and pressure from regulatory agencies to force the J.H. Baxter Company to close. Residents of the West Eugene neighborhood say for years the wood processing mill dumped cancer-causing chemicals into their air and soil. Lynn Woodrich is co-chair of the Active Bethel community. She helped organize neighbors to pressure the company to do soil tests, but many residents were afraid to participate. She says company officials didn't treat them like people.
They talked about us as data, and I kept explaining that these are people. These aren't data. These are people with homes and families and the poisoning that's going on. We need to find out really what is going on.
Baxter & Company was a lumber treatment facility that operated in West Eugene for more than 70 years. It finally closed its doors in January after pressure from state officials and numerous complaints of unbearable smells related to pesticides, creosote, and petroleum products. Woodrich says company officials tried to intimidate the homeowners in the low-income neighborhood with letters written by lawyers announcing soil tests, but the official-sounding text frightened many away from participating. She says the group sprung into action, going door-to-door to organize neighbors to pressure state officials to deal with Baxter.
There's no question about it that my group going out, we had our vests on, our official volunteer vests, and I had the flyer, and we made sure that they understood how important it was. I definitely think that we made a difference.
Several other groups and organizations helped the coalition through the hearings. Rebecca DeWitt is an attorney with the Cragg Law Center. She says she and others provided legal guidance to the groups to help them through the bureaucratic maze and reach their goals. She says that can be a daunting process.
The cleanup process or the accountability process doesn't just kind of go through bureaucratic administrative processes that doesn't include the public or doesn't involve information that empowers community members that are directly affected.
I'm Mark Richardson for Oregon News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 15th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Roz Brown, Mary Sherman, Mark Richardson, Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and This Week in Water. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, Alternative Radio, featuring lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10,